It's 8:01. Good morning, Lillooet, and welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button, and I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. We started this morning with music by Gabriel Fauré. We heard a barcarolle, number four of his, I think it's about a dozen or so barcarolles that he wrote for the piano. That one in A-flat major, opus 44. This is music that comes from around 1870-ish, I believe. And it finds Fauré still, well, I guess we'd call him in his maturity or his mature youth, something like that. He would have been in his 30s, I believe, at the time that he wrote this. Still writing largely in a romantic language, but with hints of impressionism to come, although he himself never really was an impressionist composer. Anyway, I'm telling you all that because we're going to have a little mini festival of French piano music here, the beginning portion of the show. That was a recording with Jean-Philippe Collard playing the piano. We will come back and do a couple of more French pieces by other composers. Right now, though, we will do weather and road reports. Let's see. Yesterday's low minus 0.4. Environment Canada had predicted we would hit a high of 5 degrees yesterday. We didn't even break 2. It was 1.8 for the high. As of 7 a.m., the temperature at minus 2 degrees. And for some reason, it took them a very long time to get their 5 a.m. update to the forecast up this morning. It wasn't until after 6 a.m. In fact, I think it was even a little after 7. It was only when I got here to the studio that they finally had it up. I don't know what the deal was. Anyway, I'm seeing wet, 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 wet as far as the eye can see, but relatively warm. Today, cloudy, a few showers beginning this afternoon, fog patches dissipating this morning, a high today of plus 4. Tonight, showers, temperature steady near plus 3. Tomorrow, rain with a high of 9 degrees. Friday, rain with a low of 6, a high of 11. Saturday, showers with a low of 6, a high of 10. And Sunday, cloudy with a 60% chance of showers, a low of plus 4, a high of 9. Actually, since the coming Monday is going to be a stat holiday, I will tell you that as well. Cloudy, 60% chance of showers, low of plus 4, high of 9, exactly like the Sunday forecast. There is another one of these Pineapple Expresses. Actually, it's sort of two of them back to back that are headed towards the BC coast, and they're going to be hitting all over BC with various kinds of weather. For us, warm and wet. Taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province. Excuse me. Once again, BC is the place to be, and I've explained before a rationale here on the snooze button as to why I bother to give these temperatures for various places across the country. But another rationale that occurred to me, especially after this winter and to some extent last winter as well, is just bragging rights. That is, if you like to brag about it being warmer in BC than elsewhere. If you want to brag about it being colder, well, you're out of luck. Go somewhere else. Anyway, let's start in Fredericton, New Brunswick, where it is minus 20 and sunny, nasty. Am I reading that right? Yes, that is Fredericton and not Edmonton. It's actually warmer in Edmonton. Montreal, minus 6 degrees and mostly cloudy. Toronto, light snow and minus 3. Iqaluit, pretty darn cold again at minus 35 and mainly sunny. Winnipeg, not a lot better, mainly sunny and minus 25. Saskatoon, minus 26 and sunny. Yellowknife, light snow and minus 34. In Edmonton, it is minus 15 and partly cloudy. Calgary, mainly clear and minus 14. Whitehorse, minus 33 and partly cloudy. Prince George is mostly cloudy and minus 12. And a little closer to home, Clinton fog and minus 8. Hope is 4 degrees and partly cloudy. They have a special weather statement in effect. They're expecting by the end of tomorrow up to as much as 45 millimeters of rain. Kamloops, mostly cloudy and 0. Pemberton, plus 2, and a special weather statement in effect there. They are expecting snow, I think, starting later today or this evening, continuing overnight and into tomorrow morning, and then it will be turning into rain sometime tomorrow, and then more rain after that. So lots and lots of rain coming, and Vancouver is 4 degrees and foggy right now. They have a special weather statement in effect as well regarding rain. Parts on Vancouver Island, some places they're expecting up to 150 millimeters of rain, I think, by the end of Friday, but you will want to check Environment Canada if you're headed in that direction yourself, I think. Turning to the highways, what do we got? Let's just one sec while I pull up the page here. Highway 1, slippery sections between Spence's Bridge and 10 kilometers east of Cache Creek. And then we can skip ahead to Highway 12, slippery sections between Lillooet and Lytton. Highway 40, slippery sections between Lillooet and Goldbridge. And on Highway 99 South, slippery sections from Lillooet to the Cane Creek Bridge. Highway 99 North, slippery sections from Lillooet to the junction with Highway 97 north of Cache Creek. Saying slippery sections over and over like that, it becomes a bit of a tongue twister. Okay, that is it for Weather and Roads. And so let's go back to the French piano music. And we're going to, I've chosen really the three big name exponents of French piano music of the latter part of the 19th century, early 20th century. There are a few others I could have brought in, but they're lesser known names. And maybe I'll do that, try and come up with a trio of them to bring in one day. But we're going with Fauré, Ravel, and Debussy. The 4A pieces I mentioned that we started out with was written probably around 1870-ish, and we're going to cover a 50-year span with three pieces going up to about 1920. So we'll turn now to Maurice Ravel, and this is probably the latest, I believe it is definitely the latest of the three pieces we're going to listen to, but in a way it is the earliest sounding. This finds Ravel at his neoclassical or in his neo-baroque mode, where he was looking back to the styles of an earlier era, not using the kind of lush and atmospheric rhythms and harmonies that you find in some of his other music or that you find in much of Debussy's music, but something a little more almost pointillistic and sharp-edged and with a little bit of a harmonic spice to it, but also very clean, clear rhythms. And so this is the rigodon, which is a dance form, an older dance form. It comes from this set of pieces called Le Tombeau de Couperin. Ravel very definitely paying homage to earlier generations of French composers, and especially to François Couperin in this music. Although that said, the texture and the sound is nothing like Couperin's music. It's quite different. So let's listen to pianist Angela Hewitt with that, and then we're going to turn to Claude Debussy, and we're going to hear one of his etudes. These are the last pieces of piano music that he wrote, a set of 12 etudes, and they are probably his most abstract works. He did not attach any kind of impressionistic sounding titles to them, simply a description of what aspect of piano technique each particular etude was working on. This one is called Pour les agréments, which means for the ornaments. Ornaments being the little twiddles that are put on notes in music. You find them, a lot of them, in the Baroque period. So another, and especially in Couperin, another connection with the Ravel piece there. But in this etude, Debussy has expanded it to mean really not just little twiddles involving one or two notes, but flourishes that sometimes sweep up or down the keyboard quite a bit. It's a very beautiful piece, but of the three composers here, even though this was written before the Ravel piece, it is definitely the most modern sounding and the strangest, in many ways, strangest sounding of the pieces, but extremely beautiful. So we will listen. That recording will be French pianist Monique Haas. So here is first Ravel and then Debussy. Thank you. We've been listening to two more pieces in this sort of little mini festival of French piano music. We heard just now the Etude No. 8, also called the Etude for Ornaments, by Claude Debussy. That was performed by French pianist Monique Haas. Before that, we heard Canadian pianist Angela Hewitt playing the Rigaudon that comes from Le Tombeau de Couperin, literally the... it could be both the fall, but also the tomb of Couperin. And I seem to recall there's something in the artwork that originally accompanied, was on the cover of the original edition of that that piece that indicates it is the tomb of Couperin, T-O-M-B. That was played by Angela Hewitt. I think I said that. Right, it is 8:23. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet. When Snooze Button wraps up, I will leave you with music from the Folk World Reggae playlist. Later this afternoon, 2 o'clock, I'll switch things to Studio One in Lillooet Secondary School. Student broadcasters Julia and Reza are on the air for a couple more days. They'll be through this week. And by that, I mean this is their last week, because the first semester at LSS is wrapping up. Be a new semester starting next week, and not really sure if there will be any students yet or not in the radio program. 3 o'clock, Democracy Now! That's followed by The First Years, put together by Helena from the Family Place. Actually, not the Family Place, is it? The Lillooet Infant Development Program. And Helena offers lots of valuable information and tips and ideas for caregivers of young children. That's followed by Music from the Country playlist, and at 6 p.m., as far as I know, a live edition of Wendy's Wonderland. More country music to follow after that. You'll find the details of the schedule on our website, radiolillooet.ca, and many shows posted in podcast form as well. Let's see, before we move on, I forgot to tell you yesterday, another sighting of the northern mockingbird that's been hanging around in Lillooet. On Monday morning, as I was walking home from the studio, I saw this bird. At first, when it flew across my path, I just saw the flash of the white, long white tail feathers that are on the tail is, has black feathers towards the center and then white feathers on the outer edges. And there are a number of birds actually around, especially in the wintertime, like that in the Lillooet area, the spotted towhees that many people are familiar with, and also the dark-eyed juncos are all the same. But the tail was too long to be that of a junco, and so my first thought was that it was a towhee, and then it landed on a fence, and I realized it was far too pale to be a towhee, and then got a slightly better look at it, and from there it flew up onto the roof of someone's porch, and at that point I got a really clear look at its bill. And that's a very important, birders will tell you, one of the first things you want to look at when you see a bird that you're not sure what it is, you want to get a good look at its bill and get some idea of the shape and the size of the bill. That can often help, if you, even if you yourself aren't good at working out what bird it is, it can help other birders to help identify it. There's a lot you can tell about the about birds from the shape of their bill, particularly a lot having a lot of information about, or at least useful information, if not a lot of it, about what their diet consists of. Anyway, that was on Monday, and this bird was first sighted, if I recall correctly, in early November. Excuse me, that was a sighting that was done by local naturalist Ken Wright. He saw it up near Fountain Flats. And then I saw it in early-ish December. And then someone down on Fair Flats saw it. And then I've seen it a couple of times now, a total of four times, I think, going back to when I saw it in December. Very unusual to have a northern mockingbird in Lillooet, and it's just completely out of range, let alone out of season. They are, I believe, to some extent migratory birds, and in general they're a bird that's more found in the eastern part of Canada, not going all that far north, and then especially in the U.S., eastern and southern U.S. So having one here in Lillooet through the winter is a little bit strange, but it looks like it's doing well. It's survived very well here, and now its task in springtime will be to find some other mockingbirds to join up with, and it's going to have to almost certainly have to travel a good ways away to do that. So I'm not quite sure if it has a game plan or not. All right, let's carry on with the music. This is, of course, Piano Wednesday here on Snooze Button, or I should, in this case, I better call it Keyboard Wednesday. We're going to turn you now to music by Vivaldi. And for quite a few years here on Snooze Button, I have been maintaining that Vivaldi did not write any music that featured keyboard of any sort. There are a few concertos that have little passages, little solo passages for harpsichord, but not many of them, and they are just a couple of passages here and there scattered throughout the piece. Anyway, I want to publicly say I was wrong. Vivaldi wrote concertos that involved what are known as obbligato parts for organ. That means that the organ is playing more than just the what's known as a continuo role. It's not just providing harmonic support and rhythmic support for the rest of the group. It has a lot of solo work to do on its own. However, I was partly right in that there are no concertos by Vivaldi for just organ and strings. They're all for organ plus something else and strings, in this case a concerto for violin and organ. And I have not often heard the combination of violin and organ together, but I was really pleasantly surprised by this. It sounds, they seem to work very well. Now, it must be said that Vivaldi was not, I don't know, I suspect he did play keyboard instruments and probably even played them fairly well, but I don't think he thought like a keyboard player when he was composing, and his he's rather limited in the kinds of textures that he comes up with in writing for the keyboard, whether it be organ or harpsichord. So not a lot of variety, but what's there is very pleasant, very charming, has a real bubbling sense of fun, despite the fact that this is a concerto in D minor. You'll also hear something very interesting and unusual. This concerto in the usual three movements, in the order fast, slow, fast, and in the slow movement, the middle one, the organist uses what's known as the voix tremulante stop, or it probably has, well, I'm sure it has names in other, different names in other languages that mean the same thing, but trembling voice is how it literally translates. And this is a device that gives the organ the sound of vibrato that you get in human voices. A very fast vibrato in this case. It's a little unnatural sounding, and I don't know, I wouldn't want to hear the organ played that way all that often, but it's, I will say it's not ineffective. I'm being very cautious in my critical opinions here. It's not ineffective in the use in this particular recording. So this is a recording with Manfredo Kramer playing the violin part, Marcello Bussi on the organ, and they are playing with an ensemble known as Musica Ad Renum. This is the concerto in D minor for violin and organ, Riem Catalog number 541 by Antonio Vivaldi. Thank you. Okay, I just think that's a great fun piece. We've been listening to the Concerto for Violin and Organ in D minor by Antonio Vivaldi. We heard Manfredo Kramer playing the violin, Marcello Bussi on the organ, and they were playing with a string ensemble known as Musica Ad Arenum. And I told you, I should translate that, Music from the Rhine is how Musica Ad Arenum translates. I told you yesterday that I've been on a bit of a Baroque kick, and these Vivaldi organ concertos, or organ plus this, that, or the other thing. There's a couple that have flute. There's one with violin and cello solo parts. Anyway, they've been some of the pieces that I've been listening to and enjoying them really a great deal. All right, it's 8:39. We better do a few public service announcements. We'll start with the pool schedule for today. Early morning, early bird lane swim just wrapped up a few minutes ago, but there's everyone welcome swim from 10:30 to 11:30. Lane swimming, 11:30 until 1. Everyone welcome, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And lane swimming again, 6:30 till 7:30 p.m. Don't forget the Lillooet Lions annual ice fishing derby that will be happening at Pavilion Lake this Sunday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Might be a little bit wet, but it's probably going to be a little bit warm as well. $500 grand prize, courtesy of Savinaw Specialty Plywood. Second prize, $200. Third prize is $100, and there are many consolation prizes. You register at the lake on the day of the derby. Entry fee is $20. All fishing regulations apply. There will be a concession all day with an outhouse on site, and also a 50-50 draw with proceeds going to Baby Brooke Farron and family. Excuse me. Let's see, a few annual general meetings coming up here. The Tlitket Daycare and Preschool Society has its annual general meeting Tuesday, February the 17th at 5 p.m. At the preschool building, number 42 Retasket Drive. And the Lillooet Lillooet Area Library Association, LALA. They have their annual general meeting Wednesday, February the 18th, 7 p.m. in the library meeting room. For more information, contact Betty Weaver, 256-7944, or email lillooet.bclibrary.ca. And there was something else here. Oh, yes, the Legion. Next general meeting of the Legion is coming up February the 10th. That is Tuesday, next Tuesday evening. That's at 7 p.m. And don't forget, meat draws, 6:30 p.m. on Fridays and 3:30 p.m. on Sundays. And if you want any more information, get in touch with the Legion, 256-7332, or visit their website, lillooetlegion.ca. And that's it for the public service announcements. Okay, for the rest of the hour, we'll see if there may or may not be an encore today, but we're going to turn to music by Otto von Henselt. Henselt, born in Bavaria in 1814. He came from a family that was not musical, as far as I know. His father was in the cotton trade, although there are conflicting reports about what job he did in the cotton trade. But somehow Henselt managed to get some musical training fairly early, around the age of 5. Showed talent, and just kind of carried on from there. By the age of 15, he had given his first public recital, and in the 1830s, when he was, I think, 24 years old, he gave a concert tour in Russia and proved to be a huge success there, and ended up being made the imperial court pianist or something like that to the family of the Tsar. So for quite a number of years after that, his time was split between Europe and Russia, but he would spend long periods in Russia. One of the important things that he did in Russia was to really sort of develop systematic training for younger pianists, as well as also himself teaching some of the most talented Russian pianists of the next generation. And those teachers then went on to teach the following generation, and it was that following generation that had pianists like Sergei Rachmaninoff and Joseph Levine, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on, just some of the greatest of the time, as well as them teaching some of the generations that followed, Sviatoslav Richter, Emil Gilels. So really, Henselt's influence on the whole Russian piano school tended to be quite large. His compositional career, it was a relatively small portion of what he did. He wrote this piano concerto, the only one that he wrote. There's also a piece, set of theme and variations for piano and orchestra, and then a few sets of etudes, and that's really about it, not much beyond that. Around the age of 30, he decided that he just didn't really have the necessary spark. He said he thought he had written a few good things that he could point to among his works, but that he wasn't consistent enough as a composer. So from that point on, he concentrated on teaching and to some extent performing, but also Henselt was a very, very nervous performer. He just had horrible bouts of stage fright, and in his latter years, he just gave a very, very small number of concerts. Apparently, when he did perform, if it was before the public, it was good, but not incredibly great. If he was playing for close friends that he knew well, however, he was said to be absolutely brilliant. Anyway, this one and only piano concerto that he wrote, Henselt himself did not have especially large hands, but he used exercises that stretched his hands so that he ended up having a larger span than someone with hands his size normally would have. And this concerto calls for lots and lots of those really wide spans. Not Artur, Anton Rubinstein, one of the greatest, probably one of the two greatest pianists of the 19th century, along with Franz Liszt. Anton Rubinstein tried learning this concerto by Henselt, and after working on it for just a couple of days, he said that he felt that Henselt's writing was based on an abnormal formation of his hand, and that it was something that normal people just couldn't play, and so he just gave it up. But a few pianists over the years have taken this piece up and championed it. Curiously, the premiere of this piece was given, of all people, was given by Clara Schumann. She was certainly a very great pianist in the 19th century, but it's a little unusual because this is such a. It's kind of a romantic virtuoso warhorse piece, which is not really the kind of thing you expect, to, at least a virtuoso showpiece. You don't expect that from Clara Schumann. Anyway, we'll have time for the second and third movements. I think this piece is very attractive. Its thematic material, after a few listenings anyway, starts to be very memorable, and it just has a sense of real dramatic sweep in it. You'll hear some of that in both of these movements, actually. The third movement, particularly agitated, and just has a kind of a romantic, tempestuous quality to it that's really quite wonderful. Anyway, this is a recording with pianist Marc-André Amelin. He is playing with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, and the conductor is Martin Brabbins. That was music by the Bavarian pianist and composer Adolf von Henselt. We've been listening to the second and third movements that come from his piano concerto in F minor, which back around the year 1900 or so, probably quite a few pianists played. Nowadays, very, very few. That was a recording with Canadian pianist Marc-André Amena, and he was playing with the Scottish BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, the conductor Martin Brabbins. That's just absolutely stunningly brilliant playing by Marc-André Amena, and I seem to recall reading that in the recording sessions for this particular recording, when they reached the end, I don't know if it was the end of the first movement or the end of the third movement, but once the, well, I don't even know if the microphones were off, they probably didn't have to be, but the orchestra apparently gave, even though this was not a live concert, this was just a recording session, but they stood up and gave Marc-André Amena a standing ovation anyway. Just, they were so stunned by his playing. All right, what are we at? 9:03, and let us have an encore. This is a pianist, or a composer rather, who I have only played a couple of times before on Snooze Button. Russian pianist, he was a pianist, but he was more of a composer, Nikolai Metner. I don't have his dates in front of me, but Metner died around 1953 or so. He was quite a conservative composer, often compared to Rachmaninoff, in that both of them were still writing very much in a romantic style well into the 20th century. And indeed, Metner's music often does sound something like Rachmaninoff's. He doesn't go for the big, romantic, lush melodies that Rachmaninoff does. He's always a little bit more cool, a little bit more objective in his stance. Some people accuse his music of having a certain degree of academicism, if that's a real word, but of sounding slightly learned and professorial rather than inspired. I guess it depends on the individual piece you're listening to. In this case, we're going to listen to a piece that I think is inspired. It's absolutely brilliant. There's a feather light dancing quality to this music, appropriately enough, since it's called a danza festiva, festive dance. There are also some irregular phrase lengths. There's something unpredictable about this piece of music, and also this is another one of those pieces I love so much that if you like to tap your toe to the music, you will find yourself getting stuck in a few places here, going, wait a minute, where is it? I've lost the beat. And again, we're going to hear Marc-André Amena. This is part of a live concert he gave at Wigmore Hall in London, I think back in the 1990s. The entire concert was recorded and released on the Hyperion label, and this is just a brilliant performance of his. Thank you. Well-deserved applause and shouting there from Marc-André Amelin. We've been listening to the Dansa Festiva, Festive Dance, by Nikolai Metner, a Russian composer and pianist. Actually, Metner recorded a great deal of his own music. Those recordings made in the 1940s, late 40s and early 50s. Unfortunately, he was already ill at the time, but he still played the piano very, very well, actually. And those have stood as kind of benchmarks for his music. However, Marc-André Amelin has recorded all of the Metner sonatas and a number of other pieces as well. And another pianist, Australian pianist Jeffrey Tozer, has recorded the complete piano music of Nikolai Metner. And as well, one other British pianist, I believe Hamish Milne, has recorded a great deal of Metner. So he's enjoyed quite a bit of a resurgence in the latter part of the 20th and early part of the 21st century. And all of those recordings that I mentioned are really quite good. Okay, it's 9:12. That's going to be it for today's edition of Snooze Button.